Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Numbers matter, and today we look at dollar signs and polling numbers with the Dakota Political Junkies. Jonathan Ellis is a reporter and columnist for Argus Leader Media. He joins us on the phone now from Sioux Falls. Jonathan, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
I'm bleary-eyed. Thank you.
And also with us, former State Representative Noel Hamill. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame, and he joins us from SDPB's Black Hills Bureau. Noel, welcome back as well.
Great to be back.
All right, let's start with the bleary-eyed and pizza-fed journalist Jonathan Ellis, because there was an election in Sioux Falls last night and a runoff for the mayor of South Dakota's biggest city. Give us an update, please.
We have, well, in a field of six candidates, including some established candidates, we actually have two newcomers who made the runoff, Paul Tenhanken and Jolene Lesher. So there will be somebody new, somebody who's not affiliated with the current administration or the current city council, who will win this race come May 1st. And somebody who's, you know, both of those candidates bring a little bit of youth as well, and so, you know, it'll be new times, a new administration for sure, turning the corner come May 15th.
Do either one have experience in public service? What's their background?
Well, I mean, Jolene, she was a journalist. She was in PR. She's been a small businesswoman since then. Paul had been and started his own business, Cliff Rain. He's been probably, of the two, I think, more involved in politics. Cliff Rain has worked on behalf of, on the political operative front, social media front, on behalf of, a number of campaigns, including, local races, but also, big Senate races as well. So while he's never been a candidate himself in political office, he at least understood, what it takes to run a modern campaign. And in fact, you saw that in his campaign for mayor. He used some of the more sophisticated techniques at running a race that maybe some of the other candidates did not do. So he has some experience in that realm, although not as a candidate himself.
Hmm. What happens next? What's sort of the buzz in the newsroom and beyond about these two making the top two, because it's definitely a statement about Sioux Falls going forward, but choosing between the two of them, do you see any indications of how far ahead was Paul Tenhanken from Jolene Lesher? Does he have this wrapped up?
Well, he had a very healthy lead. He had 34% of the vote. She had about 25% of the vote. So that tells you that there's a pretty good difference between them. But historically, the top vote getter in almost every election, the top vote getter in the first race has gone on to lose in the runoff. And to give you an example, in 2002, Dick Brown, he won by a very healthy margin. He had about 35% of the vote to Dave Monson's 27%, and Dave Monson came back and won in the runoff. Huh. So it's hard to look at those numbers and say and make a prediction that that's what's going to happen, because typically, actually, the top vote getter loses. I'm not saying that's going to be the case here.
Right.
There are some other dynamics at play in this particular race, and some of them have to do with partisanship and so forth. If you want to go down the partisan angle of things, and some people will definitely want to do that, Tenhanken has more votes to pick up from the other candidates who actually failed to make the runoff. So there are a lot of dynamics at play, but just looking at the simple number of him, as much as he had, doesn't necessarily play out that he would win.
Noel, when we look at a race like this in Sioux Falls and the candidates that are really coming forward with, they're younger, have less of an establishment banner to wave, does that indicate anything for the state of South Dakota, or Sioux Falls just sort of float on its own island there? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think there is something to that. I think if you look at the voter registration as an example, you know, the growing number of independent voters in South Dakota is one indicator of that. I think it just seems to me that today's voters are more independent-minded. I do think that there are more of a identity politics dynamic at work. I was going to ask about the Sioux Falls race to see if any research or polling had been done on the gender vote, because I know there's been an emphasis on, you know, leadership among women, more women running for the state legislature. You have a female candidate running for mayor. I don't know how important that'll be in Sioux Falls, but I sense that, you know, as an example, more females are getting involved in politics, and I think that's a good thing.
So, Jonathan, when I went to the polls yesterday with my ballot, now I couldn't vote for the central, you know, city council member. That wasn't on my ballot. But on my ballot, every category from mayor to city council at large, A and B to the school board, had female viable female candidates, you know, as an option. And I thought that might be the first time I ever looked at a ballot and realized that if I wanted to, I could vote an entire female ticket. Was that something that you noticed as well, just how many you know, women were sort of in that race and really did quite well yesterday?
Yeah, I noticed that. Well, certainly Janet Brecky picked up a seat on the city council in an at-large race that had been held by a man. You know, there have been women represented at times on the city council. I think they'll be better represented now with her pickup. Christine Erickson won a seat. She's an incumbent. So, and then you have Jolene, of course, running for mayor, who's going to make the runoff. I'd have to do this historically, look back. I've never sensed that there have been a lack of women running. I mean, there are always fewer women, but there are, I get the sense, just thinking about it, that there have been a lot of races where you've had a choice of a woman running. But Noel's right. I think that there, for a lot of issues that have played out in public policy-wise, that you are seeing a lot more women running, certainly in the state legislature and in other offices in this election cycle, no doubt about that. Mm.
So Jim Entman and Greg Jameson also received a lot of votes yesterday, even though they're not going to make the runoff. Those votes are up for grab. Do you have a sense that the folks who came out and voted for either one of those two candidates would lean toward Ten Hankin or Letcher?
You know, if you go by party, political party, and again, these are nonpartisan races, that I think that Paul Ten Hankin maybe has a advantage there. I know that there are some, that Greg Jameson did have a fair number of supporters who are more reform-minded, not really happy with the current administration, and that they maybe would want to lean towards Jolene. So I don't have a good sense yet of, you know, in the next 3 weeks, how this is going to, I mean, this, you know, it's going to be fast and furious the next 3 weeks until the runoff, and you know, some of those voters are definitely up for grabs.
Let's switch to a statewide race, Noel, and I want to talk to you about this polling story, because a poll is released in a press release and says Kristi Noem leads by 11 in the South Dakota governor's race, but there's some language in there that feels like a narrative is being told, like we're, you know, maybe being told what to think, and then Marty Jackley's campaign comes out and says, you know, this is a fake poll from people who are connected to her campaign. Put this in perspective for us, this notion of, you know, a poll being released and another campaign simply calling it manufactured.
Well, I think we may have learned from the last national election that, that polling is a dicey game. I would just think about it. How hard would it be to poll today compared to when everybody was using landlines to answer the telephone?
Right.
I remember doing a story on George Gallup probably 30 or 40 years ago, and he was talking about polling and how difficult it is. And he had an entirely different world to deal with. it's not only the cell phones, but I think that people, I think there's a percentage of people who aren't being quite honest with pollsters when they are contacted. And so I think polling is interesting. It gives us journalists something to write about. But I don't pay a lot of attention to polls, especially internal polls. And I think that the argument could be made that this was an example of that. You know, it's a good race between two good candidates, and but I think it's way, way too early to put much stock in a poll at this juncture.
Jonathan, your thoughts on polling in general, and then on this specific poll, whether we should pay attention to it, what it tells us about the gubernatorial race right now.
Well, I don't. As a paper, we typically don't write about polls that we don't know anything about because they're easily manipulate. We don't know anything about the statistical model behind how they chose their sample size, who they chose. I mean, there's just too many variables. So I don't view those as really. We didn't write a story about the poll. I mean, right. We got the poll. We didn't write a story. I don't. We'll do our own poll. And obviously we'll have our own questions, and there is value in polling, definitely. Noel's correct that you have a certain percentage of people who just aren't going to be honest, but there is value. But you have to pay a lot of money to get to those, in today's day and age, to get to those cell phones. So, I mean, they're a premium price. To do the poll right, you have to pay a lot of money. With regard to this particular poll, I don't know anything about the polling firm. We've used the same polling firm, a well-established one, for many, many, many years. So it's just not something we at the Argus Leader are going to report on polls that we don't know anything about.
So this poll comes from, it's not from a news organization, and it's from a company that has connections to Kristi Noem's campaign, but it's not the campaign itself. So, Noel, as you look at this, is this just a campaign strategy from the Noem campaign in general to sort of paint things as if she's ahead right now in a way that maybe is not accurate? Is that too much of a stretch to say that's what this is? Because that's what the Jackley campaign is saying, essentially. He's like, well, know, these are her friends, and it's, you know, the statistics are not proven, and, you know, this is just a joke. It's an April Fool's joke,
It's politics. I mean, we're not on the inside of either of those campaigns. I mean, I don't think Jonathan is, and I know I'm not. So who's to say? It keeps your name out there. Do you have an advantage by saying that, you know, the poll puts you ahead? Really, at this stage, I don't see the value in it. Now, if you had, as Jonathan referenced, if you had a bona fide pollster, and we'll have that later on, indicate that one candidate is ahead or the other, then I think that then you have something worth reporting and worth talking about. But really, just I'm restating myself. No, I just don't put much credence in it at this point.
Yeah. And we did not do a story on this either. We're just talking about it with the junkies because it's an interesting back and forth, you know, for two campaigns. So also this week, Jonathan, you know, Attorney General Marty Jackley and his campaign announced Workforce Development Initiative details. As we look at where we're at in the campaign with some of these policies and initiatives being laid forth, you know, for the public review, what are your thoughts on what candidates are leading with?
Well, you're seeing, I mean, the workforce, they're actually getting lost. There have been so many proposals from both, policy proposals from both candidates, whether it's workforce development or ag proposals or all sorts of things that, you know, they're sort of kind of, it's good to see. I don't want to denigrate this, but it's good to see actual legitimate policy provisions coming out. But they've been coming so quickly, it's very difficult to kind of keep a pace of everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's good to see that they're not just, you know, there have been far more serious policy proposals put forth by the campaigns than attacks or anything of that nature. So that's, I think, you know, a lot of people would say that that's a positive.
Mm-hmm. Noel, are you encouraged by this, business as usual? What are your thoughts on some of the initiatives that are being laid out by these two candidates for governor at this point?
What I like to see in candidates is, specifics, and I think both candidates have made an effort to do that, so I consider that a positive. I think that economic growth in South Dakota and ways to achieve a broader economy and more growth is important to our state. We know that we struggle in many areas of growing our economy. I haven't seen either candidate successfully put distance, between him or herself and the other. But, again, I like specifics from candidates. Mm-hmm. I don't like generalizations. So the more specific programs that candidates can outline for the voters, the better.
Are you seeing the specifics that you like so far, knowing, in the stage that we're at in the campaign, or do you think that more work needs to be done to really make that as meaty as it should be?
Well, in terms of what the candidates have done to date, yeah, they've laid out a skeleton. Now they need to put some meat on the bones. But there's a danger in that, too, because once you become too specific on proposals, you leave yourself open to criticism or sniping or maybe just contrary economic analysis from real experts. So it's part of the process. But again, I think I like to see candidates that are willing to take risks and put out specific information.
And finally, let's wrap up with a little bit about campaign fundraising, another important topic, or is it? Jonathan, do we look at Dusty Johnson? His congressional campaign announced that they have received more than $100,000 in contributions during the first quarter of this year, celebrating and thanking people for that. Does that matter, to look at money raised?
Yeah, some people will want to hold their nose and say, oh, fundraising, but the reality is you need money in order to run a credible campaign. That's just the reality of it. And fundraising, depending on where, you got to analyze where the money is coming from, but it can be sort of a bellwether of showing where a candidate is getting support, whether they have sort of grassroots support, or whether they're just getting money from big, corporate donor or political action committees or that kind of thing. So, it can show you where money is coming from. It can give you an idea of a candidate's strength, frankly. Mm. So Dusty Johnson, put out a release and he's raised another $100,000 quarter, which is a good showing for him. And the filing deadline typically is on the 15th of the month in which they've got to file the quarter, the quarterly filing. That'll be Saturday, I think the filing deadline for all the candidates will be the 14th, the end of the week. And so I look forward to seeing, where all these candidates are, right, including Neil Tapio, who just recently entered the race.
Right. And now, Noel, let's end with you and talk a little bit about the South Dakota Democratic Party's announcement that they'll be, fielding candidates in every legislative district. The significance of the Democratic Party sort of putting that forth at this point?
I think it's, the Democratic Party has struggled in this state practically from statehood with a couple of interludes in the 70s and in the 30s where they did much better. It's if those candidates actually run, if they stay in place, if they're not simply placeholders, I think the numbers are a positive for the Democratic Party. If I could just comment on Jonathan's point, and I totally agree, if you're running for Congress today, if you look back, I think Kristi Noem spent like more than $2 million to run for that House seat. Mm-hmm. Raising money in a state our size, to have to raise that kind of money is a pretty tall order. And I think when the numbers come out, I'll be surprised if Chantel Krebs isn't probably even with Dusty on the fundraising. But again, it's an expensive proposition. So, I don't envy them their task.
Noel Hamill joins us from SDPB's Black Hills Bureau, and thanks to the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio for their support in helping us bring you content from the Black Hills. Noel, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
And Jonathan Ellis was on the phone with us from Sioux Falls. You can find his work at argusleader.com. Follow him on Twitter. Jonathan, thanks so much.
Thanks, Lori.